All right, welcome back. One of our best historical revisionists working in our times is without question Mike King. He's a great writer, a great researcher, and he's not afraid to go where others have very little interest in going. Let me put it that way. Mike, welcome back to the program. You got another new book out, I guess, huh? I'm going to find out about that.
Oh,
this
yeah.
Looks like a good
actually,
one.
Actually, several since last we spoke. Now, this one's right off the presses, and it's some very unique and explosive content, which some of this can gain traction.
Oh, I don't know how. All people have to do is look at it. This is something that I think many people intuitively already suspect, right? And this, what we're talking about here is death by nature or death by plan. Which is it? A lot of people have died, and we wonder, did that person really die of heart problems, or were they poisoned to make it look like there are heart problems? And Mike's book title is terrific. Dig 'em up. Dig 'em up. Let's find out what really, let's do a proper autopsy, run tox work, tox screens, and all the rest of it. And it doesn't matter how long they've been dead, there's going to be evidence there. Let's find out what
That's
really
right.
killed a lot of very famous people. So tell us more about the book. This is interesting.
It's fascinating. And you know, Jeff, whenever I set out to write a book, it's usually because I've acquired so much information and given so much thought to a given topic. I feel I'm ready to do a book on it, and I expect that maybe I'll pick up a few more bits of knowledge in the process, but invariably, I always learn a ton more. I had about 28 or so of these people in mind, and then in the process of doing the book and looking at things closer, I ended up with 40, and the title is Dig 'Em Up, just M with apostrophe E-M, Dig 'Em Up. It's available on Amazon. My author page is Mike King or Mike S. King. And the subtitle is 40 Famous Natural Deaths or Assassinations by Poison. And these are big-name people, Jeff. All of them are, like, big. Or at the time, at their point in history, they're big. And it's,
well,
it's
as I've said for many decades, Mike, they kill people all the time. And you'll never know about it. They have no problem killing people.
None. They kill people like as if they're insects. Look at the wars that they've waged over the centuries. Yeah. And then look at the overt assassinations, all the people who've been shot, or all the old European royals who had bombs thrown at them. The thing about poison, though, is it's probably the preferred method. Because there's always plausible deniability.
Yes.
When these people die, it mimics the symptoms of could be heart attack, cancer, blood clot,
now,
stroke, pneumonia.
Now, the tech that they have, we'll call it pharmaceutical tech, because these are drugs. They kill people with drugs. They're very specially made, constructed drugs. And they're designed, it's a bioweapon. They're designed to kill people and mimic a profile of a, quote, normal death. They can shut your kidneys down. They can shut your, they can do anything. They're that good. They're that advanced. Don't underestimate these people, ever. Don't do it. They're way down the road.
Absolutely. I mean, in the 1970s, they held the church hearings, and the world got to learn about the heart attack gun.
That's right. That was the Frank Church. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And you know, again, you can go back to antiquity. The ancient Romans and Egyptians and Persians and Indians, every culture and civilization has got their stories of leaders who were poisoned.
That's
so
true.
All this trick in a book. But when you put them all together in one book like this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's never been done.
You really see
no,
the
no,
disturbing
it's never
pattern.
Been done. How did you discern which people to include? What was the deciding factor that, for you, gave you reasonable cause to doubt a natural death. What? How did you approach that?
Right. I addressed that very early on in the book. It has certain criteria. One of which is they had to have died suddenly at a relatively young age. And if you throw out the two oldest and the two youngest, the average age is 59 years of age. And that's young. Even in the, for the 1900s, that's young.
Yes,
yes. Very young, because if you go back to the 1900s, if a man made it to the age of 50, he could expect to live to at least 75. So that's a big indicator. Secondly, most importantly, is every one of these 40 people, in one way or another, were acting as an obstacle, were pissing somebody off. And it always goes back to the governing ruling cabal in this world.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, correct. I see at the bottom of your Amazon little two paragraph description of the book, and this is a book that's going to help a lot of people refine, as in bring into focus, things in history that they didn't even think about before, and how it would be if someone had murdered Mr. X or Mrs. Y instead of they're dying on their own. At the bottom it says, report an issue with this product or seller. Now, Mike has been under the radar for years because of his fearless investigating and researching. And I'm wondering if this is the kind of thing you'll see under most descriptions of books on Amazon now, or is this something that is only given to a relatively small number of people? Report an issue with this product or seller.
I think it's with all the products, Jeff. Uh-huh. I think it's with all the products now. But I will say this. It's interesting. Amazon has loosened up. They won't touch things like the Hola hoax or World War II yet, but they have loosened up. There's like a new ownership going on. So it's gotten better.
Oh, good.
Definitely it's gotten better. And so this will be all right. There won't be any problem there. And it's also available in the Kindle format for people who have Kindle readers.
Oh, good.
Or paperback 8.5 by 11. Yeah,
fairly and evenly now. That's nice to see. You've been under the boot of discrimination and censorship for a long time, off and on.
Well, I was one of the originals to go in 2017 when Amazon for the very first time started censoring. Mm-hmm. They were under intense pressure from the ADL, and that's how my book The Bad War was removed in 2017. So the ADL had me on the radar.
Is the book back?
Did they
restore it? Is it back on Amazon?
No, they won't touch that. They won't touch the World War II stuff.
Damn.
Can you believe it? But you can still get that at my website, which is realnewsandhistory.com. It's no longer
that's
tomato.
By the way, that book is awesome because it's quick, it's brief, it's knockout after knockout. These are truths. You can't really get in there and argue with them. They're just truths. And it's called the Bad War, and that was a terrible war. There were a few heroes in that war on our side, and none on the other side that I can think of, but certainly at the top of the list would be General George Patton. He got it. He understood at the end. He had been lied to. We fought the wrong enemy. And that's true. He's 100% correct. And you can make up your own mind about the rest of it, but just... If you really
he's in my book.
he's
in my book. No, dig him up, because there's no way, if you've seen images of that fender bender he was in, there's no way that accident killed him.
That's ridiculous.
No, he was finished off in the military hospital by the OSS, Eisenhower, and that greasy bunch. So I'm sure
I read a story, it was in the Spotlight long ago, by the guy who allegedly went in there and killed Patton in the hospital. Guy confessed.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember that? Now, we're talking 35 years ago. Long time ago, at least.
Yeah.
This was quite a revelation. Anyway, it made sense at the time, and it fit.
Yeah, that's and there's quite a few surrounding World War II, because that was such an important event for them. They had to remove all the roadblocks for that. Another one of the leaders I have in this book, they're mostly Americans, but I've got some foreign cases, was Marshal Pilsudski of Poland. And what's significant about him, Jeff, is the New World Order crowd, the Jewish mafia, they were building up for the war against Germany, and they were counting on Poland to be the triggering point. Well, Pilsudski had other ideas. He wanted good relations with Germany, and they used to exchange, Hitler and Pilsudski used to exchange birthday greetings, and they signed the non-aggression pact, and he's considered like the founder of the modern state of Poland, because they broke away from the Russian Empire after World War I and fought a war with the Soviet Union. So Pilsudski is like their George Washington. And he was he wanted good relations with Hitler. He was very adamant about that, that the enemy is the Soviet Union, not Germany. So there's not going to be any World War II with Pilsudski in charge of Poland. Conveniently, in 1936, he gets ill and dies, and the guy who immediately replaces him, Marshal Edward Ritz Migley, is a total ultra-nationalist warmonger who hooks up with the British, and that's how they got the war going. So Pilsudski is in here. Neville Chamberlain is in here. Just a few months was replaced with Churchill, he died in 1940.
Let me give you a little more on Neville Chamberlain as to why he's so important. Neville Chamberlain was the Prime Minister. Was that his title of England? I think he was PM,
yes.
Right? Okay,
yeah.
He was PM in like 1936, 37, something like that. In 1938, I believe it was, he went to visit Germany, a formal visit. He was no longer Prime Minister. He went to visit Germany and Hitler and was so impressed by what he saw in the German nation, how the government was taking care of its people, how the people had rallied and they just adored the government as a fact, he went back and wrote about it. And in 1939, he said something to the effect, I see no reason to think that Germany is any threat to Europe. And he's right. Germany was forced into World War II. That we know now. But Chamberlain was created a hell of a stir in the world when he went forward with his feelings about Germany, and he published them. So go ahead.
And according to Joseph Kennedy, who's another enemy of the cabal, that he had confided to Kennedy, Chamberlain did. He says the Jews are pushing us into this war. So,
oh, there you go.
So there you go. And he dies suddenly and inconveniently. And now this book just deals with the natural causes, but also in that same time frame, the famous Lawrence of Arabia is killed in a motorcycle accident, and he's pro-Hitler, and he's big in Great Britain. So there's this unmistakable pattern. It goes throughout the book. I go back in the 1900s. U.S. presidents and vice presidents that nobody's ever heard about died suddenly. And then you dig a little deeper, and you see why. But the thing is, when somebody is shot, whether it's Garfield or McKinley or JFK, you know, even though most people just believe the official story, there's always an element of doubt amongst a lot of people that there must have been a plot. There's something deeper here. But with these poisoning deaths, that's never the case, because you've got that plausible deniability. So, he was sick, he died, and move along, let me see here. And nobody wants to seem like they're crazy asking questions.
Got it. Yeah.
But that's why when I put these all together, 40 such cases, it's clear. There's something going on here. And I give a motive for each one, and I talk about the circumstances and the oddities of their sudden death. And it's all about patterns, because even if you could throw a few of these out, Jeff, let's say there were a few of them were natural causes, okay? Not 40 of them. Not 40.
What were your research criteria that you used on this? Did you actually go digging back in the newspapers of the time? Because newspapers in those times, in fact, until the 70s, really had the news. It was corrupted. It was skewed, but that's where you went for news. It wasn't all this electronic TV stuff until the 70s and 80s, and it just took off. But yes, how did you do your research?
Well, I tell you, I became suspicious when just in writing other books, I learned of people like President William Henry Harrison dies within 30 days of becoming president. President Zachary Taylor dies within a year and a half of becoming president. So I went back and I looked at every president and vice president people I never heard of, and just to see when they died. And then I realized quite a few of them died while in office, and quite a few of them, let's say their deaths benefited certain powers. And then you just begin to see the pattern. And I was surprised. There's so many American presidents, vice presidents, and also ex-presidents who died young. But especially in those years, an ex-president still had his words carried a lot of weight because he was esteemed for life because he had been a president. Like someone like James Polk. He dies mm-hmm. just 2 months after leaving office, and he's only in his early 50s. Okay? Or Chester Alan Arthur. He was another one.
Chester A. Arthur. Yeah.
He was he's president. And after soon after his presidency, he died. But they're all, so many in the late 1900s were all right-wing, traditional conservative Republicans. Mm-hmm. Okay, you might mm-hmm. call them by today's standards the original America Firsters, and they start dying, dropping like flies.
Right after the turn of the century,
William McKinley was another one. Now McKinley was shot, okay, but he's in my book because he was recovering from his gunshot wound. The prognosis
he was supposedly
totally
getting better, as I remember.
Yes, but then all of a sudden he started getting sleepy. So that's another thing. They surround you. They get to your Secret Service, but they also get to the medical people around you.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want you and they get you in one of their hospitals, you're done.
That's something that we should keep in mind now. Not that they're looking for all of you by name, but when you go into a hospital now, remember the medical profession, Western medicine, is the second leading cause of death in the formerly United States. You go into a hospital and you're really rolling the dice. If you don't have an advocate to go in there and monitor what's being done to you, and you're not able to do it yourself, you're really asking for trouble. And I'm not kidding. I think most of you who have listened a long time know that. It's not good out there. And the quality of people in hospitals, you might get one out of five or six who are older, who have been there, who have maturity and wisdom, who understand. But you get these Gen Z types, and there are some good ones, but the majority are useless, worthless. They're not good. It's dangerous. All right. So give us a couple of examples of some that you already have. You already have. But some who would really shock people. Who is some of the biggest shockers there for the average person? Give me a name or two.
How about Senator Joseph McCarthy?
Oh, Joe, tail gunner Joe.
Joe
please.
McCarthy. Now, people, especially, the type of folks who listen to your show or were somewhat informed, that they will already know that Joe McCarthy was a big threat to the establishment because he was charging not only after the communists, but the upper-level New World Order types who had allowed the communist penetration. So that much is known. But how many people are aware of the fact that while he was still senator, even though he was no longer the chairman of that investigative committee, he still remained active, and Eisenhower actually feared that he was going to run for president one day. And he was only 47 years old, and Joe McCarthy died suddenly. And they said, it was his liver. He was a drunk. He drank a lot. It's not true. So not too many people are aware of how young he was when he died.
If you remember,
and he had a lot of fight left in him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can go back and look under, I would assume, YouTube and look for Joe McCarthy hearings, and you'll see him there. And you can see Roy Cohen, who was one of his top prosecutorial aides. And young Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who worked with Joe McCarthy, believe it or not, you can see him in some of the old footage, too. So, that's a big name. I agree. He might have been a president.
Isn't it interesting, Joe McCarthy, Robert Kennedy asked Joe McCarthy to be godfather to his daughter. He's godfather to Robert Kennedy's daughter.
I didn't know.
And the only Democrat senator that did not vote to censure McCarthy was John F. Kennedy. He called out sick that day. And look how they all ended up, these Irish Catholic conservative anti-communists. Yeah. McCarthy and the two Kennedy brothers. So that's an interesting pattern.
Yes, 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 yes. Well, let's think about this. Joe McCarthy could have been president if they hadn't gotten in the way and stopped him. George Patton would have been president if they hadn't gotten in the way and killed him. They killed both of them, but they stopped him. Anybody else come to mind real quick who was presidential timber, who was knocked out?
Knocked
you mentioned
out
some who actually got into the White House and then were killed, so it took a little longer.
Warren G. Harding.
Okay. There's another one.
Warren G. Harding was elected in the largest landslide in American history. This was after World War I. The country didn't want any more to do with Woodrow Wilson and the globalism and the wars, and there was a depression. And in fact, his campaign slogan all over his posters was America First, Warren Harding. And he was one of the senators that killed our U.S. entry into the League of Nations.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So he becomes president. Cuts taxes in half, cuts spending in half. He's immensely popular, but he's despised by these globalists because he killed the League of Nations. And 2.5 years in, he's only 55 years old, dies suddenly.
Yeah, well, isn't that funny how that term, died suddenly, has come to take on a life of its own now in these days. Died suddenly.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, you know, global genocide and depopulation.
Yeah.
It is thought now.
It's interesting. In all of these cases, there never seems to be an autopsy. Now, you think somebody at that level should be automatic autopsy just because your position.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. It is now
bad, Jeff. They've been... This stuff has been going on, and it goes all the way on to the contemporary times. Mm-hmm. Okay, I list Kerry Mellis, the developer of the PCR.
Good for you. Good for you.
Okay.
I have no doubt. He died very conveniently, just on cue.
Perfect timing. Yeah.
Good job. Well, this book is going to be an eye-opener for a lot of people. I hope that they do get it and read it and think about these things. They kill people all the time. It's getting rid of somebody is not a problem. It's done. And the amount, I think that many of the chemicals that they use now to kill people are probably going to be biodissolved in a day or two. They probably have a half-life. A very short order, and that they're just gone. They won't be found after a few days or a week. I think that's how good they are now. I know the best political artist of all time, in my view, was David Dees. David was AI art before there was AI art. His art is so brilliant, and they could not have him around when they were going to roll out this genocide. They knew that he'd just destroy it with his art, and he would have. And they gave him turbo cancer. How they did it, I don't know. It could have been on his door handle of his car, doorknob of his front house. The stuff goes right through your skin. It's that dangerous. All right? It's not a joke. Now it is felt that 80% of the people who did not take the shots, let's say that's 20% of America, about 80% of that group has spike protein now identifiable in their bodies. In other words, shedding has spread it to about 80% or 4/5 of the people who did not take the shot. And of all the people who took the shot, it is now also said, and you can find this on the homepage, that they're expecting that each person who has taken the shot will have lost, on average, about 30 years of their expected life on this planet. And in this time, they've lost 3 decades. That's the average, because there's so many things that these shots do to people, dozens, that ultimately will turn out to be fatal. People don't understand. 5.5 billion people have been given these things. around the world. 5.5 billion. That's what they want to have as a casualty figure. They want those people gone. This is not a joke. Anyway, so it goes from individuals to masses of people. And it is quite doable. Quite doable. They could do it again. Fear does a lot of things to people that are not necessarily rational things.
Yeah.
All right.
And I suspect there's a lot more people who perhaps were not of this level of stature, but in the mid-levels.
Correct.
Or lower levels. Like, it's somebody
thousands.
Like a David Deed,
I'll bet
you mentioned.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. One of the last things David ever said to me is, he said, they gave it to me. He could barely talk. I was in the hospice with him. And I said, yeah, you know, we've talked about that many times, and I agree. No question. They gave it to you.
Well, you know, Jack Ruby said the exact same thing in the 60s. Jack Ruby, who killed Lee Harvey Oswald to cover up for the Jews, then they got him too.
Yeah. Yes, they did. One of their own.
Yep. Oh, yeah, they do take out their own from time to time. They will do that as well. It's just like mafia. If it serves the agenda, they will take out one of their loyal servants, too. That's interesting.
What are your thoughts about, speaking of that, about Epstein? Do you think Epstein was actually... it didn't look like him on the stretcher. You know, they let that one shot leak of him dead on the stretcher being carried out.
Yeah, that looked fake. It looked like a 3-foot-tall guy. Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't look right. If you profile the face against any known profile shots of him, photos, it just doesn't work. I would think of somebody else they took out. Anyway, so yes, they will kill one of their own if they have to. The Epstein files will never be released, so don't hold your breath, okay? It's not going to happen. And somebody said a very interesting, and I did mention this the other day, very interesting reason why is because the mechanism of control over that many famous and powerful people would be gone. And they, whoever they may be, want that control to continue. So they've got it. It's in the records, but they're not going to release it because they would lose their control over those people. Makes sense.
Yeah, well, the spin up till now by the fake news is that this was just a perverted billionaire and powerful people doing inappropriate things, and that's...
Oh, no.
That's nothing. It's not about Prince Andrew and 17-year-old girls, let me tell you. I mean, I think some really, really sick shit went on there. And it's Mossad. That's the key. It's 100% Mossad. I mean, I don't have to tell you about who Ghislaine Maxwell is, who her daddy was. But, it all roads ultimately point back to
the usual suspects. It's the same people. And that's not to say all of those people are bad people. It just doesn't work that way. Not at all. But they do have an incredible ability to run powerful positions. And they promote their own. And it's 0.03% of the world population. That's the club, and we're not in it. And those people, for the most part, you have to remember also, are not biblically oriented in their history. They adopted the Judaic religion in the 600s. These are the Ashkenazis. And when the Ashkenazi Empire failed, they took it with them and moved into Eastern Europe, and they haven't been stopped since. Very smart people. And ruthless. And that's what your book... You could have named your book Ruthless as a front word. Ruthless, colon, dig them up. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is interesting. Do you think that, let's say in the case of Warren G. Harding, after all this time, 100 years or thereabout, there would be evidence of poison in his system? Probably would, wouldn't there? Because the poisons back then were not these advanced chemicals they have now.
In the hair. Things in the hair, the bone marrow.
Yes.
I understand once that they were testing an Egyptian pharaoh, it was theorized he may have died. So this stuff doesn't go away, or it's a very, very long half-life. So, you know, yes, indeed, you would be able to find telltale indicators if you tested these people.
Yeah.
You know? And now, it's interesting. Zachary Taylor was dug up like 20 years ago. His family gave the green light for it.
Yeah.
Because he was a U.S. president, and he had basically told the secessionists, if you secede, I'll hang all of you, or something like that. And he died shortly thereafter. But they dug him up, and they tested. They said, oh, it's positive. But then you look a little deeper. They only tested for one specific poison. Well, there's a wide variety of poisons. So, this is how they do the limited hangout trick sometimes to defuse something. Sort of like a 9/11 investigation. Oh, we investigated that. I don't think these people will ever be dug up, but it's good enough for me to see this pattern to absolutely believe.
Essential questions here. Is that how politics was played in the game? Yes, back in the day. Is FDR on your list? He's very suspicious death, too.
And I'll tell you why. And people might be surprised at that, because he was such a loyal soldier of the cabal. He engineered World War II. And the Jews love him. Why would he be on the list?
Starting with
Pearl
Harbor.
And I'll tell you why he's on the list. It's because not all globalists wanted the state of Israel. There was a big divide there. FDR was totally against having Israel as its own state. Not because of any sympathy towards the Palestinians, but simply because the bigger picture is they want to get all the Arab nations on board with the New World Order. But now you're creating a problem like that. It's very difficult for them to sell to their people. So he was totally against the founding of the state of Israel. And I'll say this, Jeff. Had FDR lived, he's only 63 years old, Israel would not have become a state. How about that?
Well, and if JFK had lived,
and when they took him
Israel
out, they put in
would
Truman.
Not be a nuclear
Truman was
power.
With the Zionists.
I don't know how anybody can really understand modern history, and I include JFK in that, unless he understands the whole issue of nuclear bombs. If you don't understand thermonuclear weapons and Israel, you can't understand what's going on. You just can't.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And I don't know now. Trump has done everything but roll over, sit, stay, and beg to get along with Netanyahu. So this thing about Netanyahu saying, we will attack Iran, and Trump trying to make it look like there's a bit of a split there. There's no split. Everything Israel wants, Israel gets. All right? It's just the way it is. He's back to giving Ukraine weapons as well. They did this rare earths treaty thing, and now the weapons are flowing again to Ukraine. So we're headed toward... Think of all the flashpoints we've got. Ukraine? Right? Right? Gaza? West Bank? Lebanon is still a flashpoint. Syria is a flashpoint. Yemen is a flashpoint. India, Pakistan, flashpoint. Russia, Ukraine, flashpoint. There's just lots of them. And I won't even mention the biggest one of all, maybe China and the U.S. And you got Japan and the U.S. Japan is not happy with the U.S. at all. Taiwan looks like a target to me. Philippines are involved with potentially being an adversary of China. There's flashpoints all over. I'll bet there are 10 Class A flashpoints, or nearly 10, that could go at any time. Any of them could be ramped up. Look how quickly this Pakistan thing and India, just boom, it was there. The only thing keeping Pakistan, I think, on the sidelines at all is that they only have about 4 days' worth of munitions. They've given it all. They were tricked into giving it all to Ukraine. Their artillery shells, tank shells, and all the rest of it. So that's how they control these countries. We have been largely depleted from our own inventories. We don't have what we need at all to fight a war. And if we were to fight China in a theater situation over there, we'd lose. In fact, who was it that said, I think it was Hegseth, said, every war simulation we run between the U.S. and China shows the United States losing. Any gaming that's played with supercomputers shows America losing. Right now.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, what China has achieved there, I mean, not just militarily, but you look at the development of their cities and their bridges and their subways.
It's
really remarkable.
They're really in trouble financially now. We did that. I'm waiting for either Japan, which has $1 trillion in U.S. debt that they can dump, and the Chinese have more than that, I believe. One or the other of them, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they dumped that debt, those bonds, on the world market, and it would be a hell of a shock to this country. That's all I can say. So there's talk going on in the back rooms, on back lines of communications, black ops, so to speak. They're trying to keep this thing, I think, from really going that last step. Because once it goes that last step, there's no pulling back.
Well, that's the good news, is that there's always back-channel communications. I mean, even 8 years ago, when Trump was pretending to threaten North Korea, and everyone was alarmed, there was actually back-channel negotiations came out, and then all of a sudden, you know, we make peace. And Israel actually wasn't happy about that. They hate North Korea because North Korea is advanced technologically, and they sell that to the Arab states. So they never liked that. But there's no question, you know, it's that same bunch behind all these poisonings, you know.
It always is.
Call it New World Order, Illuminati, Israel. You know, they all
different
connect.
Names, right? It's true. It's very, very true. I don't know where it's going to end up, Mike King, but you're going to have a lot of books to write. I know that. You're not going to run out of material. I mean, any of these flashpoints could go off at any time. And I wouldn't be in the least surprised. You've got China backing Pakistan, right? The U.S. is backing India, basically. I'm keeping it simple here. But those two are clearly positioned to possibly do something. I don't think the Pakistanis, they have no card to play except a nuclear card. They can't. They may have a crackerjack army, I don't know, but they don't have the munition to supply the men to fight India. And what are they going to fight over geographically? Kashmir? What are they going to fight over? I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. But it just doesn't make sense. They'd have to go nuke or they can't fight.
Yeah.
That's the way it looks to me, anyway.
Well,
tell me your next venture. What are you going to do? Go ahead. Oh, I was going to ask you about your prints of the paintings. You know, we talk about pre-World War II Hitler as a man. Who was he? What kind of family life did he have? What was his World War I experience like, and what it was like was he was a hero in World War I for his side.
That's right.
No question about it. A Class A hero. Threw caution to the wind. He was a runner on the front lines, running information back and forth. They didn't have cell phones. But he was also a tremendously talented painter. And what Mike had done, and I don't know if you still have these available, but Mike got a lot of his original paintings and had them transferred to beautiful reproductions on, I don't know,
glossy posters.
It's glossy poster paper. And they look, this guy was not a minor artist at all. He was a major artist, believe it. And with the right kind of backing.
He painted those when he was about 19, 20 years old.
I did an article not too long ago.
I did a side-by-side of his paintings versus some abstract Jew artists who, at that same period, were right. accepted, were admitted to the Vienna Academy of Fine Arts, which rejected Hitler.
It's the same thing with all of our Ivy League schools. Who gets in?
Yeah.
40% of the, I think it's 40% of the admittance to these schools are people who describe themselves as being Jewish. They get in.
Yeah.
And that's caused a lot of people to be very unhappy when they're we have to have some kind of equal representation in this society. And when you have 6-7 million people total and yet they represent 40% of the, I think I'm right, I may be wrong, but I think it's 40% of all the entrants into the Ivy League schools, what do you have? You got a problem.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be equal opportunity here.
Yeah. They take care of their own. I don't know what I'm doing next, but since we last spoke, I did also put out some other interesting books, which maybe we could talk about last time.
Please. Tell me.
One of which is about the Shroud of Turin.
Oh, and, fascinating subject. What'd you
find? Fascinating. And so much I discovered that I didn't know about the forensics of it. And the booklet that I wrote, it could be read in an hour. It's called The Divine Selfie. That's also on Amazon. But it's amazing because, I'm raised Catholic. You'd think I would know all this stuff. Of course I knew about the Shroud, but I did not know the extent of the forensic evidence supporting it. So we're not talking about religion, faith, blind faith, just the hard forensics. This thing is astonishing.
Well, tell me a little bit. I mean, here, I can tell you I read something recently, but back in the beginning, this cloth appears to have had the image literally molecularly burned into it with some intense...
It's a photograph.
Yeah. Some intense heat was emitted, and it left a picture of what was wrapped in that in that shroud. That's the truth.
It's confusing. The shroud itself is a negative. That I state as a fact. And when you take a picture of the shroud, you actually see a face. And this is what happened 120 years ago when the first photograph of the shroud was taken. Because the shroud itself, if you see the shroud, the image is kind of vague. It almost looks abstract.
When and also the burn marks, let me say this.
They're
black burn marks on the shroud that a lot of people don't know. The shroud was almost burned up in a fire at once, but it was saved
twice.
Wow. I thought it was once. All right. Well, anyway, it was saved by Providence or something else to preserve that image. And there are burn marks on it, and they look very odd. So, but they're not on the actual image to a large degree. They're not in the way, fortunately.
Yeah.
Or was that divine? I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, it's just it's a fascinating subject, and I thought it was a dead issue for a while because I remember about 1989, 1990-ish, there was great fanfare when it was discovered that carbon dating dates the shroud to only 700 years old. And it was proclaimed throughout the media that it's obviously a fake. It's not 2,000 years old. We don't know how the image got there, but it's not 2,000 years old. And what I learned is that study was rigged. It's totally rigged because now you talk about this fire that you mentioned. This fire occurred in 1400s, let's say, give or take, okay?
Right.
Yeah. The cloth was damaged. But around that time, there was, this is historically known, there was some repair work done on the edges of the shroud. New fabric was weaved in with the old, almost seamlessly, you can't even tell. So what these sons of bitches did is they keyed in on the medieval repair work, and they carbon dated that. And thus they proclaimed the shroud to be a fraud.
Gotcha.
Then when people wanted to see the methodology and their data, they wouldn't release it. The British Museum would not release it. It took a Freedom of Information Act court order in Britain to finally get at the data. Long story short, it's been redated, and it is 2,000 years old. But a lot of people don't know that because of the hype from the original rigged test. Yeah.
I had not heard that. So who gains by dismissing the Shroud as some kind of an out-of-time fraud or an out-of-time relic? Who gains to have the Shroud?
Well, it's the usual suspects. I mean, they hate Christ and they hate the idea of God because the masters of the New World Order, they fancy themselves as God. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it's not something that... This is why they promote the theory of evolution. They just don't want a connection between the masses and their creator. Because once you have that connection, you start thinking a certain way in a different way. They don't want that. They want a mass of worker bees who worship the elite. So that's why they're always hostile towards God, towards religion, all religions, particularly Christianity, though. And that hostility is atheistic, and a lot of it's Jewish, quite frankly. So
I'll never forget the video of some Jewish protesters, all right, in Israel, and they were yelling at some Christians who were somewhere over there, and they were yelling this. They said, "Yeah, we killed your Jesus, and we do it again right now."
I remember that video.
Hate.
Yep.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Hate.
Yeah, it was those drunken settlers.
That's right. They were drunk. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. We killed Jesus. We're proud of it. And then there's Sarah Silverman, the comedian. But you can, there's actually headlines in mainstream papers. There's a big problem over there. They spit at Christians.
Right.
So that's definitely a big part of the explanation behind the hostility towards the Shroud.
I've never seen there. It's linked right there. Perfect. I've just never seen more hatred, spontaneous hatred, than I saw in that video of you talk about Jews versus Christians. It was right there. I've never heard the hate. Never heard it like that. Here's another question about your new book. What about the Pope they killed in 1978? Did any of the popes make your list? There was a pope. I forget, was it John Paul? I can't remember.
John Paul. He only lasted a couple months. And, I thought about including him. It's very strange.
Right.
But I wanted with my selections to be able to establish a clear
you can't get that
potential
out of
motive.
The Vatican. No, that's
yeah. So I don't know if he was a New World Order deal or if it was like an inside job in the Vatican. I don't know. No. I suspect it was, but I just don't know about him and what it was that he may have been attempting to do. With all of the other 40, they did something that really, really pissed somebody off. Okay, I'll give you another hint, sneak peek, like Joan Rivers, and you know where I'm going with that, right?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I knew Joan was a personal friend and very brave.
Oh, really?
Very wonderful lady, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. They even gave her a chance to take back her comments on CNN, and she doubled down, you know?
That I didn't know about, but she... See, that's a measure of the woman's integrity. She was a very strong, centered person. We had some very fun times, and I'll never forget her. She was just terrific.
Yeah.
She was not what most people would think. And I've never seen anybody with more skill in her craft. She was so funny. She just would demolish audiences. Funniest things I've ever seen. But, good. That creepy clinic, first of all, I don't know how anybody could die from what she went in there for. It makes no sense. Not at all.
Her daughter got money for it. They settled. So that tells you right there.
Ah, all right.
It tells you right there. It was definitely negligence.
Mm-hmm.
Gross negligence. But it's not really negligence. That's how they kill you.
I understand. Yeah, no, I don't get it. Got it. All right. Well, congratulations, Mike. Keep in touch. I try and post all of the things you send. And if you look on the left side of the homepage, you'll find Mike King there. And he's got a lot of very worthy things for you to read and look at. Support his new book. Guys like him are not as common as we we should see now. It's hard to find good people.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Jeff. Good night.
Okay, good night. Mike King, and that's hour two. Okay, we're going to take a little breath and come right back. Hour three, and Mitchell Henderson is going to talk about India, Pakistan, next.